House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is February 8th. It looks like it's 1:45. For the record, we have Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, myself, Co-Chairman Meyer, Representative Stoltz, Representative Jewell, Representative Hawker, and Representative Wireless. Of course, Representative Chenault is excused. Okay, on today's schedule, we have two bills. House Bill 273, which is a new public hearing on this bill, delay payment for allowable absences. And then, as time permits, I'd like to bring back up House Bill 245, Veterans and POW Vehicle Taxes. So if there's nothing to come before the committee at this point in time, I'd like to turn the floor over to the sponsor of the Bill 273, which is Representative Bruce Weirach. And I understand your staff, Mr. Harvey, is going
to... Mr. Chairman, can Sharon Barton also come up? Because sure. There'll be questions for Ms. Barton, and she'll probably have some comments.
It looks like we also have Chris Pope online for questions, is that correct?
And Mr. Pope was helpful in State Affairs to talk about some of the legal issues associated with exceptions and some of the questions that had arisen before on whether a certain class of recipients should receive it or not. So I think that he may be in a position better to answer some of the questions than either Mr. Harvey here and or Ms. Barton, but they can decide that. Mr. Chairman, the House Bill 273 is essentially the policy decision made by the bill. Right now there are every Alaskan who is a resident of the state is qualified to receive a permanent fund dividend check. And under certain circumstances, if you leave the state, say, to take care of an ailing parent or relative, to settle in a state, if you're transferred out for military purposes, there's so many, I can't think of them all, if you are a student, et cetera, if you qualify under one of those exceptions, you can continue to receive a permanent fund dividend check. And last year, Representative Seaton introduced a bill that would have required checks to be held if a person did not live in the state. They claimed an exemption, and if they returned to the state, then they would receive all their back payments that they would have received once they returned and regained their residency. And this year, the bill was reintroduced, and as it went through State Affairs, what the bill would do is this. If you qualify for an exception to receive a permanent fund dividend out of state, you would receive that for a two-year period if you still qualified for the exception. And after that two-year period, the permanent fund dividend division would hold your check until you return to the state of Alaska. And when you qualified as a resident, then you would receive your checks that you would have received if you had been in the state. And so what the bill is intended to do is to ensure that people who receive permanent fund dividends are Alaska residents and that they return to the state. And by returning to the state, they get that money, all the money they receive. So it's not taking away, quote unquote, a permanent fund dividend check. And part of the impetus behind the bill was when I learned that the division, since the inception, when the legislature started carving out these exceptions, the amount of cash that has been sent out of state under these exceptions approaches $150 million. The other thing that became compelling, particularly during testimony offered in State Affairs by Ms. Barton, was the huge percentage of certain categories of people that have never returned to the state once they've claimed an exemption. And I know we've all received emails saying that passage of this bill would be anything from anti-student to anti-Christian. Really, it's going to give everybody who qualifies for a permanent fund check their check when they come back to Alaska. And that has a tremendous benefit to the economy of the state. It achieves the purposes of giving checks to people who are Alaska residents. And in some cases, if somebody returns to the state, they get a large check to pay off some loans, to invest in a business, to otherwise use personally as they see fit. So that's what the bill does, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good. Any questions, Representative Jewell?
Just one, if a person whose dividend has been held come back and meets the requirements to reestablish residency and is able to get all of those back dividends Would there be any interest collected on those dividends at any rate, or is it just going to be for the amount?
The bill provides that they would get the checks for the amount, no interest.
So for people who normally would be getting that, who would maybe use, be investing, wouldn't even be able to collect the interest at the rate that the dividends were making.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, have you thought of any limits on the outside, Representative Weirich, to, let's say, for example, somebody goes out to college or whatever they're out in college for, have you ever thought that there should be a 5-year cap or a 10-year cap or something, and say, so this doesn't go on for the next 25 years, and then when they're 85, they come back to Fairbanks or whatever, and they collect their checks for the last 65 years or whatever.
Maybe that has come up, and maybe Ms. Barton or Mr. Harvey can address that in testimony. I haven't heard that, and I haven't considered it.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Terry Harvey, Representative Weirich's office. There is now a 10-year moratorium on allowable absences, a cap, if you will, that has come into legislation. So that will go into effect in 2008, I believe, and a person with an allowable absence can go as long as 10 years. So that is currently set to be in place, I believe, 2008, I'm not sure.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsor? Mr. Harvey, did you have any other testimony or anything else to add?
Mr. Chairman, and to the committee, the permanent fund dividend is obviously a very touchy subject for all of us in Alaska because all of us have something at stake. Sometimes we feel like the debate is veering off course a little bit. A lot of the arguments that we hear, I need my permanent fund dividend now and not later. And certainly most of us that receive a permanent fund dividend do need it. I certainly do need my permanent fund dividend. And we think that it's important to point out that the original public purpose of the permanent fund dividend was about physical residency in Alaska, that we each receive a share of the earnings. And it has not ever focused on needs, per se. If you need it, you get it. If you don't need it, you still get it. We also hear the argument, we hear some compelling arguments. I am a bona fide Alaska resident. I'm leaving the state. I should qualify. I am an Alaska resident. We're not here to debate who is more of an Alaska resident, who's been here 20 years versus 10 years, born here. That's the context of residency. We return to the requirement that a person physically reside in Alaska for 185 days. The legislature has established that. The Supreme Court has backed us up on that. We also hear that this is, that perhaps we're suggesting that those with an allowable absence are committing fraud, and that is certainly not the case. A person that qualifies for an allowable absence is not committing fraud by collecting a permanent fund dividend outside of the state. We also hear that perhaps someone in one of these categories is in their most vulnerable times of their lives. We feel that across our state, there are thousands of individuals receiving their permanent fund dividend that are in their most vulnerable times of their lives. It's about fairness, and the question that we answer with this particular legislation, how much of our own permanent fund dividends do those of us who physically reside in the state and collect, how much of us wish to continue to take less of a permanent fund dividend on behalf of those who move out of state, collect their permanent fund dividends, and never return to the state?
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Harvey. Okay, Ms. Barton, did you have anything you wanted to add to?
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer questions the committee may have.
Okay,
I have a question. Very good. Representative Stoll. Thank you, Chairman. What's the administration's position on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stoltz, the administration supports this bill.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsor?
One thing that's been brought to my attention is this paper that you provided. Was this provided by the department? It's entitled Permanent Fund Dividend.
That's the December. Yes. Yes.
Methodology and summary.
They should.
Can you just go through some of the facts that you brought in that and start for the benefit of the community?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wayrock, the paper he alludes to is the front page of a December.
If you would please give us your affiliate.
Oh, Sharon Barton, Director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. The paper was the front page of a December report, which we've now expanded and updated, and the new report might be in your package that looks like this.
February 6th
date. In this report, we added a considerable number to the sample, and we sliced and diced the data just a little bit finer at the request of members of the House State Affairs Committee. But with the additional sample, almost triple the size of the original sample, the rates of those absent groups, the rates of return, or as we've expressed it in the report, did not return, only grew larger. For the four largest groups, which were the focus of our original study, those accompanying someone else who's out on an allowable absence, which is primarily composed of military and student dependents, they return or do not return at a rate of 82%. Only 18% return at the end of 10 years, at which time they're no longer eligible at any rate. College students, excuse me, I gave you the wrong figure. Yeah, no, it's 82% for a company, that's true. For college students, they do not return at the rate of 67%. Active military at 72%. And a very much smaller group of those out receiving medical care do not return after 10 years at 63%. The report goes on to break out what happens if people are only out for 1 year, did it make a difference, or only out for 2 years. And only with students did that make much of a difference. Students who only go out to school for 1 or 2 years seem to return at a higher rate than others. The weighted average for all absence types, including the smaller ones as well, for all absence types is 72% do not return after 10 years. We also looked at the 5-year return rate. The financial summary is in the attachment one of this report, and it breaks down for you year by year the numbers out and the projected cost of those who did not return to the state.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you did this survey, did you just take 1996 and then look at just that group, or did you bring in people after 96 to include in the survey, or can you just tell me a little bit about how you counted the people?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krutula, we started last year with the study, and at that time we took a sample of 1995 applicants and tracked those individuals through 10 years. We dropped the 95 group off and selected a whole new group of those who applied in 1995 or 96 and then tracked them through 2005. So there are no persons included in the group that just applied in 90 or just applied in 2000. It just tracks a particular group to see what their behavior might be.
Yeah, I just want to be clear about this. So I mean, I see it as a problem that it was just one specific group in 1996 that's been measured. We don't really know what the behavior of all these other people for the last 10 years has been. We didn't look at 97, 98, 99 and try to figure out. I mean, it would be hard, maybe impossible to do, but that wasn't done, am I right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crutula, that's correct. This data is worked up largely by hand. The computer is not very friendly about spitting this data out, so we could certainly take a sample of any year and look at those folks as well, but we hadn't noticed any particular difference in behavior anecdotally that would suggest we might find something different in behavior if we started at a later time, but that could be done.
Sure.
Just one other quick question, and you might be able to maybe get this data. You could probably at least tell us how many people are required for the exemptions, though, per year, could you? Because, I mean, I just noticed that some of the numbers seem low. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there just aren't that many people claiming some of these exemptions. But in the later years, I would be interested to know how many actually claim.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crutula, if you look at Attachment 1, that lists by years, by category, how many people were actually paid. It's not the number who asked for the dividend, but those who paid.
Thank you. Anything else, Representative Crutula?
No, thank you.
Representative
Joel? In here, well, I guess, yeah, it is in here. So for secondary schools, I assume this high school, since the time that we've started this, we've gone from 213 to 504. That are high school students. That's an interesting number, but I was trying to look for how many were college students. I'm not seeing it yet. And one of these, right here, okay. And those are, do we have a number of graduate people going? Any, you know, between the undergraduate, graduate levels?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, they're included in this it's just called students, but college, that is the college group, the second group in that chart. And graduate students and undergraduates, med school students, they're all included in this group.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, looking at this, Liz, is it fair to say if House Bill 2 hadn't been passed, the Peacock Bill hadn't been passed in 97, 98, that we wouldn't have as large in numbers we're dealing with, but the piggybacking provisions for spouses and children. How much did that exacerbate what perceived as a problem?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stoltz, your question is if spouses and children were not included as an allowable absence.
Pass, which is was facilitated that.
If you look on the, again, on page one of the attachment one, it lists out the numbers of accompanying spouses and children who were paid that absence each year. So it would, if they hadn't been included, there would be less that impact that's summarized in that.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I've been unsuccessful at getting them to utter it out loud, so, but I don't know. That's fine. I'm used to it.
Okay. Anything else for folks?
No.
Okay. If there's no other questions for the sponsor, we do have some people who signed up for public testimony. So why don't we go ahead and get a question or something, Kelly?
Just sure. Did you consider taking the 10 to 5? I mean, I don't think you went far enough. No.
You know, I didn't go there.
Well, why not?
I try and bite what I can chew and understand what I'm chewing, and it's a simplistic answer, but that's the reason.
And
go ahead. Please.
Can you reset? In other words, the person comes back and gets an exemption to restart the clock?
I believe you could.
So a person, back to the example where they had two absences, as long as they get back here for a year, qualifying year, they reset. It just seems to me that, and I'm not trying to talk into doing anything.
No, I'm not.
I just think that what you pointed out here makes it absolutely apparent that this is a big loser. I'm really surprised with
my
the
bill?
Numbers being no.
I
like your bill. That just doesn't go far enough. But that's just my opinion. You could have gone 5 years, and I'd have been happier.
You know,
I said, Robert, if you could go through the chair, so we could all be involved in the conversation.
Okay.
What I want to avoid is a conversation between you two. So, but go ahead, Mr. Robert.
Yours. No comment, Mr. Chair.
No comment. Playing the fifth.
No comment.
Okay. All right. I didn't mean to shut off the discussion. We want to avoid any side discussions here. Okay, yes, Representative Couture?
I'm back on the chart again. And just in terms of the chart on attachment, I guess in attachment one, when it says secondary school, is that high school or is that college?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Couture, that's high school.
That's high school. And I'm back in. You've got attending colleges on in attachment two, that's right, is that right? And then you've got the years on the side, and then you've got, yes, these are the people. Are those from 96 on, those are the number of people who are out of school? Is that how I read that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Petula, this is the additional analysis requested in House State Affairs, and it takes those who were attending college from the original 1996 group and analyzes if they're only out for 1 year, how many of them come back. If they only stay out 2 years, and so on, how many of them come back? When the committee passed the two-year amendment to the bill to allow them to stay out, they were interested to see what the facts were behind that amendment, whether or not people did in fact come back at a higher percentage after only 1 or 2 year absence.
And Mr. Chairman, it looks like there's a higher return rate for those first 2 years, is that right? Than it would be for the later years.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Petula, that's true for those attending college and for some of the smaller groups. For the other large groups, it's not true.
So finally, is there any way to measure if a student staying out extra time for more school, you know, like going into law school or going to medical school, there wouldn't really be any way of knowing that without you going back and reading the applications, right? Thank you.
Okay. And there's no other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I just note that many times as a student who left Alaska and then went out, you know, we didn't get permanent fund dividends when we were out, and now when a student would come back, they would get a large check to help pay for expenses. But the other thing is many students who leave the state of Alaska apply for in-state residency to get the benefits of in-state tuition, and that has a far greater economic benefit than a permanent fund dividend check annually, up to many thousands of dollars more. So the financial calculus that goes into the thinking by parents and students, you know, can take that into account.
Comment, response?
Mr. Chairman, one comment towards the original purpose of this legislation. When we researched how allowable absences came about, the discussions we heard time and again, the argument we heard, there should be reasons why a resident can leave the state temporarily with an intent to return, and that language is in the application with the Permanent Fund Division. Dividend division. You state that you are temporarily leaving the state with an intent to return, and we feel that by making eligibility conditional in this legislation, that we can push forward the language and make this return back to what the how allowable absences came about in the first place. And of course, as the categories expanded over the years, so did the numbers of folks applying, and just over a 10-year period, we find that 97,000 individuals applied out of state, received $136 million in permanent fund dividends, and never returned to the state. That's why we're here.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, one additional point about college students. There is so much concern about college students. The effect of the bill as it's currently written, practically speaking, on college students is that they would receive their dividends not just the first 2 years, but the first 3 years they're away in college, because their first year, more often than not, they're leaving for school in the fall, and so they are not out of state that first year, their freshman year or whatever their first year is away out of state for more than 180 days. So they would get it the first year and then for 2 years under the bill. So the impact on college students, a four-year college student, is really only 1 year of delayed payment.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Okay, if there's no other questions for the sponsor, let's go to public testimony. It looks like the first person on the list is Ralph Taylor. Ralph, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were on the telephone. My apologies. Welcome, Ralph. Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to talk here. It's not an expected opportunity. And my position is not to, in this brief time, to change any minds, because I believe that there has been a great deal of work done on this bill, and a lot of study and hard work. And everyone agrees that those people who shouldn't be receiving permanent fund checks should not receive them. My position is to only tell you that there is a lot of checks and balances in place at this time, and I can speak of one because my daughter served in the military, and she served 5 years in the military. She graduated high school in Anchorage from Diamond High. She enlisted in the military in the state of Alaska, and she was shipped out. She went to Iraq, she went to Kuwait, and she went to Saudi Arabia. And because of the checks and balances, at one point my daughter did not receive a permanent fund dividend check. And she requested a review of her application. And again, her application was denied. And again, I'm not here to say she should get one from the past. I'm here to let you know that there are checks and balances. After she was denied, my daughter was satisfied with that. Well, not satisfied, she didn't like it, but she accepted. She accepted that decision. So what I'm here to say is that there are checks and balances, and many times we look at things and want to change things and make new things when there are checks and balances that make things that are in place that should be used, and we don't use them to the full extent that they should be used. And I believe that if we have those checks and balances in place, which certainly deny my daughter her permanent fund, and I believe she should have received one. And it certainly denied her one, and she never received. That there are checks and balances that should deny those people who are out of state and not coming back, should deny them also. And we hear those stories of people receiving multiple checks and checks and not coming back. And those are horrendous abuses of the system. And I believe that we need to look at what we have in place and see if those things are available to stop those abuses that we already have. And again, I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you coming out this afternoon to testify. We do have a question, Representative Weiler.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate the service your daughter gave, and I don't think that we, particularly now that people from Alaska are coming home dead, having served in the country in Iraq, we simply have to be very sensitive to that. So I do appreciate the service your daughter gave. One of the things this bill does not do, it does not interfere at all with the full panoply of rights that every permanent fund dividend applicant or recipient would receive if they receive or do not receive a dividend, nor would it interfere with any fraud investigation of somebody who claims a dividend or gets one inappropriately. And so the full range of checks and balances that you've discussed with respect to your daughter's case would still be in effect and still be available to everyone. So I just wanted to assure you that that's still part of the system that is unaffected by this legislation.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, Representative
Weiler.
Representative Foster.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Mr. Perry for coming all the way down from Nome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. Very good. I wasn't sure where you came
from. I apologize.
That's fine.
No, I think it's great. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Okay. Now we'll go teleconference. Ron Hoyt from Homer. Ron, are you with us?
Yes.
Ron, we're hearing.
Yeah, my name is Roy Hoyt Jr. I live at box number 2121, Homer, Alaska. I've been a year-round resident of Alaska for over 45 years. I'm a World War II and Korean War veteran, and I think you people are going in the right direction on this bill. Alaska's been ripped off too long, and it's time to quit catering to the palms-up population that we've got. Military personnel are promoting people to come up here because once they get here, they say, then you can collect this dividend from now on out. The bill really is not anti-anything, and I believe that a two-year absence is adequate, and that is for payment for 2 years. And the interest is not needed. And you ought to cap the time at 5 years at the most anyone can be out of town. There's too many that are part-time residents up here that we've got a lot of them that you need to cut down on the time that they can be away from the state instead of leaving it like it is with only 160 some odd days that you have to be in this state. They ought to cut it back to 90 days and like they had it before. And that's about all I have to say, except that I think you're on the right track, and I'd like to see this bill passed. And I think it's a shame the way that this state's been treated by these people that we've taken care of that way.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hoyt. Seeing no questions, we'll move on then to Dr. Vi Gerald. Dr. Gerald, are you with us?
Yes. Greetings to House Finance and all of you. Yes, my name is Vi Gerald, PhD. First I'd like to mention I oppose HB 273 PFD delay payment for allowable absences, and I ask that the entire bill be voted down. And then I'd like to mention briefly in the January 19th, I think the date is, hearing on HB 273. The figures, and I'm looking at at the written figures here. A state employee, Department of Revenue employee, gave a figure of about $144 million that was paid in over 10 years to people who did not return. You can see the figure in writing. But anyhow, the way they did the sampling, I think it's absolutely an unproven and invalid figure that's given, because the minutes mentioned it, that a small sample was taken and then it was given to the entire the figure for whatever the population and so forth money was. Anyhow, many people would like to have the legislature focus on bills to create more jobs for people. And HB 273, in my opinion, targets groups. Targeting groups is illegal and unconstitutional under the state and U.S. Constitution. And some of these other some reasons, in my view, why this bill is unconstitutional under the U.S. and state constitution is, let me find my notes here. Targeting people, targeting groups is illegal. Okay, no notice, no proper notice, deficient notice, deficient, defective notice, that's illegal, unconstitutional. A lot of these people have not had any notice, any proper notice. They can't be here to be heard, to protect themselves. And military and college students have not been notified to the effect, in the proper way that they should have been. They're not aware of this bill, not able to respond. Okay, here are some other constitutional issues, state and U.S. Constitution. Denial of rights to due process, denial of rights to equal protection of the laws, and I mentioned no notice, also Article 9, rights retained by the people, First and Fourth Amendments. One of the big things is no notice. Anytime you have no notice, no proper notice, you throw out the whole bill. Now, I should mention also, military people who go outside, and students also, college, university students, they intend, they're residents of Alaska, they intend to come back to Alaska. They're all Alaskans, okay? They have residence here, a lot of them have voter registration here, a lot of them have student loans, and as Alaskans, they're required to pay more college tuition outside the state than they do in Alaska. A lot of them return here, holidays, and summers to be employed, and targeting these two groups is absolutely illegal and unconstitutional. And I believe, I should mention, we've always had family in the military. I currently do not have any Alaskan family in the military or any Alaskan family in colleges or universities outside. But we will protect people when we think they need to be protected, and a lot of people feel this way. Got a couple more notes here, just a second. It's a perception of many people, in my opinion, that this that they like to see the legislature, and I mean this as a good message to the legislators. You know, I have a lot of friends in the legislature. I have a lot of friends that listen to these things. But it's considered a real kick in the face to the military and the students for these two groups to be targeted. And they're using the word fraud, directing it at these two groups. That's absolutely should not be tolerated. There are already statutes on the book for fraud and anything this comes under, any procedures and so forth, so we don't need this bill. And one thing I'd like to mention, and this is a lot of people ask me to talk for them because they can't get to these places or phones to talk. So it's a public perception that if HB 273 is not voted down, lot of people believe that lawsuits to have it overturned will be filed in state court and, if necessary, in federal court. But they hope that doesn't have to happen. They hope that HB 273 will be thrown out. We'd encourage you as legislators and anybody else who's listening to help create jobs for people, and that will take care of the problem. And good luck on all your work.
All right.
On all your work in getting jobs and good things for all of us. Thank you so much. Bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye, Gerald, PhD.
Thanks.
We do have a question for you, though. Representative Weirich has a question.
Well, it's not so much of a question. I wondered, Mr. Chairman, is Mr. Pogue still on the line?
Okay.
Mr. Pogue.
I'm here.
Yes.
I'm going to paraphrase, Mr. Chairman, and then maybe Mr. Pogue can clarify what I said. But Mr. Pogue is an assistant attorney. Well, maybe can I ask Mr. Pogue a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Pogue, are you there?
I am. Chris Pogue, Department of Law. I'm using a speakerphone because I can hear better, but I'm wondering if the members of the committee can hear me.
We can hear you fine, sir.
Thanks.
Mr. Pogue, you were president of the House State Affairs and talked quite a bit about the legal aspects and the constitutional challenges that may exist related to the bill. And I wondered if I could, Mr. Chairman, invite him to just briefly review those so that we have that at least as the basis for our understanding of what's going on here with the exceptions. But there's nothing in the sponsor statement. There's never been any testimony by myself or anybody I've known about this bill that has wanted to target one specific group at all, nor has there been any comment at all about fraud. Mr. Chairman, I just want that part of the record to clarify what was said. But I think that Mr. Pogue is in the best position to address what the problem is when you try and identify a class by need that we need a dividend, and also the situation where you're treating everyone similarly situated equally and the constitutional issues associated with that, because I think that also has come into the testimony which needs some clarification.
Okay, very good. Mr. Pogue, did you hear the question from Representative Weirich, and would you like to respond?
I did, Mr. Chairman. Representative Weirich, I apologize, you were breaking up a little bit, but I think I got the gist of the question, and I'll sort of recap the testimony I gave at House State Affairs. The persons who qualify for the permanent fund dividend are Alaska residents, and what this bill does is, for Alaska residents that are not physically present in the state, they have to have a subjective intent to return, and the legislature has given the PFD division broad discretion to decide what objective criteria should be used to verify that subjective intent is reasonable. The Supreme Court has also affirmed that broad discretion was given to the Permanent Fund Dividend Division to do that. There have been a number of challenges. For example, the case that probably comes most to mind is Church versus State, and it's a case probably very similar to some of the issues that we're touching on today. Mr. Church did not qualify for an allowable absence. He was outside of the state more than 180 days. And he raised a lot of the challenges that Dr. Gerald raised today. And the Supreme Court, in denying Mr. Church's appeal, said the following. The permanent fund dividend, it's an economic interest, and it's designed in part, well, it has a couple of purposes, but the part that's applicable to this particular issue is the objective is to encourage Alaska residents to remain if they're here or to return if they're not here. The provisions that define state residency, the objective is to make sure that the permanent fund dividend is received by permanent Alaska residents. So as long as the court and church said, as long as the enactment that's being offered by this legislative body has and a legitimate government objective, which would be to make sure that these are permanent Alaska residents and that the objective has at least a reasonable fit to the means that are being used by the legislative body, then it would survive an equal protection challenge. And that was the meat and the heart of Mr. Church's challenge. He raised due process, but the court said that there was no substantive due process issue. He raised a right to travel issue, and the court said that the infringement was too small to justify a right to travel concern. So the heart of that appeal was equal protection. And some of the concerns that have been raised in prior amendments that have been offered is accepting out a certain group. For example, we know that from the statistics that Director Barton's offered to the committee, we know that the military and the students have a very low likelihood of returning. They're roughly about 30 to 27% are likely to return. So if we were to, on a need basis, accept out the military or accept out students, we would have not allowed an exception that was consistent with the purpose of the allowable absence provisions, which again are to ensure that these folks are likely to return. So it's the singling out of categories that are on a need basis and not on a basis that's consistent with the purpose of this provision that caused the equal protection concern. That being said, this particular piece of legislation applies across the board to all allowable absence categories. It doesn't target any particular allowable absence group, and I don't think it has any of the equal protection concerns that Dr. Gerald's concerned about. I'm not sure what she's referring to as far as notice, but I guess I'll speculate that this legislation is not retroactive. It would apply to the future, and the Supreme Court has said you only have a right to a dividend if you qualify. And if you change the system that's being used today for the future, they would have to qualify under that future system. And so there's no notice issue as far as I'm concerned. It's not a retroactive piece of legislation. I'm not sure what the due process concern that she raised was, but intent to come back, she's right, is the key. It's the heart of this. But objective factors that show proof of the intent to return are the issue. And allowable absences were a legislative assumption that these folks were absent under circumstances that was consistent with an intent to return. We now know from the statistical evidence that that's not necessarily the case, and this piece of legislation attempts to address that, and I think it addresses it in a way that's consistent with the purpose of the permanent fund dividend provisions, which is that we have already assumed that folks who are absent for the longer they're absent, the less likely they are to return. The two-year provision addresses that. And then beyond that period of time, when the statistics show that folks are not likely to return, their eligibility is conditioned on their return, so objective proof that they do, in fact, intend to return. And so they don't actually qualify for those dividends until they do return and show that that objective proof is present. So that's why the interest issue doesn't come into play, because they don't actually qualify. They won't actually qualify after that two-year period of time until they come back, spend more than 180 days in state, and qualify per the other regulatory and statutory provisions under the permanent fund dividend statute.
Okay.
Does that answer the question or sort of give a framework for why this legislation doesn't, in my mind, cause equal protection concerns?
Mr. Pogue, I think you did an excellent job. I appreciate you staying online to answer those questions. Okay. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify? Anyone here in Juneau? Okay. Anyone online that we know? Okay, very good. Well, we'll go ahead and close the public testimony on this particular bill. We did have a couple amendments to it. Representative Joel had to leave, and it's my understanding from the sponsor that he's willing to wait until Mr. Joel comes back, Representative Joel comes back, and also there may be another amendment or two that's forthcoming. So we'll keep this bill handy, and we'll be bringing it up in the next day or two. So with that, let's set this bill aside for now, and we'll go ahead and take up the next bill, which is House Bill 245. I see the sponsors here. Representative Lynn would like to come on up and bring his handy-dandy staff if he wants to in this panel. You're welcome to join us.
No? Okay, for all these people.
Let Representative Lynn do a solo here. Okay. All right, Representative Lynn, let's see. What do we got? We have, need a motion, I believe, to adopt a new CS. Representative
Stone,
would you like to
have a motion? I have it in front of me right now.
Okay. Somebody else
want? Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do
okay.
that.
Representative Hawker, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move CS for House Bill number 245. That would be the finance version, reference LECA 2606-24-LS-0604/S-Sierra before the committee for as a discussion draft.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Hawker. I think at this time, before we go to Representative Lynn, I'd like to ask Ms. Cunningham if she would explain the changes in the
objects you can explain.
Okay. Actually, I don't know if you have to object.
To Ms. Cunningham?
Yeah, I object to her. I don't want her up here.
Okay. Ms. Cunningham, please.
I did.
Okay. All right. Representative Stoltz will object so that we can discuss the differences in the two CSs.
And I'm delighted to have her here.
Very good.
It's too late, though.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Suzanne Cunningham, staff to Representative Kevin Meyer. The blank committee substitute that has been adopted contains two changes. It includes Congressional Medal of Honor recipients under the same paragraph that provides license plates for Pearl Harbor survivors and former prisoners of war. This also means that there would be no fee for the registration of the plates and also no fee for the plates. The second change is that the current prisoner of war and spouse's eligibility for a plate was removed, and an immediate effective date was added.
Okay, any questions to Ms. Cunningham on the CS that's being proposed?
Why were the POWs, the current POWs and spouses, cut out?
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, in looking at the specialty license plates as a class, currently there is no eligibility for spouses in any of the plates, whether it's a veteran, a disabled veteran, a Purple Heart recipient, a former prisoner of war. There is no eligibility for spouses. I think that if the committee or if this body or this legislature would like to look at providing eligibility for spouses for these specialty plates, it may be appropriate to do it in another proposal, another piece of legislation, so that it can be examined at that level. Since the intent of this legislation is to honor those who serve our country. And Representative Lynn, in his public testimony last week, did state that spouses do serve our country. And so I think if you know, this committee or this body would like to look at the eligibility of spouses, look at it at the broad level for all of the military plates.
Okay, and just so you know, we do have Dwayne Bannock is available also for questions. So.
Do you know how many current POWs? I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I see a distinction between the wife of some poor husband of someone who's a current POW. Do you know how many current POWs we have from Alaska?
I believe through the chair, Representative Curtula, I believe through testimony that was provided last week, we are unsure if we have any at this time, thankfully.
Representative Lynn,
do you
have any comments on the proposed CS?
Yes, the recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor, I have no problem with that. I am, must confess, I am disappointed that the current prisoner of war has been taken out, and likewise the spouse, I can live with it if that's the desire of the committee. We have, praise God, no current prisoners of war that we are aware of. It could be the next 5 minutes, you know, who knows. Obviously, if they're a prisoner of war, they're probably not going to be coming back to get a license plate. They might have a car registered in their own name, not their wife's name. On the other hand, the spouse back of the current prisoner of war, she's a very special person, not only as a spouse of a military person, but a spouse of somebody who's serving in combat, even in captivity, but also a spouse of a prisoner of war who cannot get. There's nothing, I don't see what the problem is, really, in allowing her to get a POW plate because she's there and she can get it, and the current prisoner of war obviously cannot get it, and I guess he can get it when he comes home. It's not a great issue of the universe, I guess, but it's just an honorary thing. We're not talking about hundreds and thousands of people. We're talking about hopefully zero, maybe only one or two. So it's not a big thing with me, but I think it's just almost a token thing that just shows a special honor, respect to these people who could find themselves in this situation.
Okay, Representative Barber, did you have a question? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wondered, along with the intent of dealing with vets and POWs, do we want a license for a vet who's MIA?
I would have no problem with that. I don't have it in this bill.
How would he apply for it?
Beg your pardon?
I'm sorry. His question was, how would you apply for it? Did you hear?
On MIA? I assume that the spouse would have to apply for it, but it's not in his bill, so I really hadn't thought about it. And I guess he's going down the road of how would a spouse apply for the people.
Oh, I see.
Would that be the thing? And I would imagine that the military would inform the spouse that she has, in fact, his or her spouse is a POW. And has some piece of communication which you could take to the DMV.
Okay, maybe it's assumed that I... Very good. Ms. Cunningham?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to, and I think Dwayne Bannock is online with DMV, so he's going to appreciate this plug that I'm about to give for a current program that we do have. In 2003, Senator Gretchen Guest sponsored a bill creating a special plate that commemorates Alaska veterans. Anyone may purchase this plate for a $100 fee. And whether I purchase it for my car, I pay the $100 fee, and every 2 years I pay the $35 renewal fee, it shows my support for veterans. There's nothing in the statute that actually prohibits an organization like a VFW, an Officers' Wives Club, anyone from purchasing a plate for a spouse or for maybe a parent who lost a child in action so that they may display this plate on their car. And when this legislation did pass the legislature in 2003, it's noted in the minutes that the money that is raised from the sale of these plates would be appropriated back to support services for veterans. So we do have currently on the books an excellent way to commemorate our veterans, our military personnel.
Okay. Maybe we should go to Mr. Bannock and get his thoughts. Mr. Bannock, are you online?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I am.
Okay. You've heard some of the discussion. Any comments thoughts?
I'll do my very best. Sure. Thank you. My name is Dwayne Bannock, representing the Division of Motor Vehicles. There's a lot of conversation between some of the different bills, and I am looking at version S in front of us, and notwithstanding the good comments of others in the committee, one of the things that I would give you as a professional opinion, many of the automobiles that we may be talking about, could be talking about, should be talking about, would be talking about, are currently in the name of two different people. Those two different people are potentially the person of interest here and their spouse. So let's just give a brief example, and I'll embarrass Ms. Cunningham for a second, and we'll pretend that she and I are married, and jointly we own a caravan, our family caravan.
Sure.
And she has gone away to war, and she is now either missing in action, or she has been awarded the medal of Congressional Medal of Honor, or one of these different types that we're talking about. Under Chapter 28, where the Division of Motor Vehicles collects its authority from, when there's two names on the vehicle, we recognize either one of those names for these programs. So, while I certainly do not mean to be disrespectful in any way, shape, or form, but in the issuance of perhaps the prisoner of war, obviously it's not our soldier that's going to be coming into the DMV, because obviously our soldier is a prisoner of war in this case. However, in most cases in Alaska, there are two names. When we have a husband and a wife, most of the time in Alaska, a husband and a wife are both on the vehicle title. Thus, the other party could make application on behalf of the prisoner of war and accomplish what it is that's trying to be accomplished. I don't know if that confuses or muddies the water any greater, but I would like to kind of echo the comments that Ms. Cunningham made pertaining to our newest license plate called the Commemorative Veterans License Plate. We were very, very proud to be a part of that bill when that bill was passed, and I'm only disappointed that we haven't sold more of those plates. Because of what that plate actually means and what that plate does. So, quite frankly, we promote that plate wherever we possibly can when we're in speaking engagements in the public. We have displays of them, And that's what we really feel we can do best to honor those members of our military, both past and present.
Okay. Very good. I think that clears it up a little bit, Mr. Bannock. And you have, I don't know if you're watching on Gavel to Gavel, but you have embarrassed Ms. Cunningham.
No offense meant, Ms. Cunningham.
Representative Stoltz, do you have a question for Ms. Bannock?
No, thank you. Just to Ms. Representative Lynn, just these license plate bills become a lot more complicated than anybody, than certainly other than even hundreds of millions of dollars issues we deal with, and knowing how these things can Christmas tree once we start adding on. Are you happy with the compromise and willing to move it out of committee as the draft is presented right now?
Which compromise?
The work draft that's ahead of us that's about to be adopted as a CS.
I learned to be happy with what's necessary to be happy with. I prefer the other, but it's the will of the committee what they think would be appropriate.
Okay. Well,
I appreciate Mr. Bannock's remarks about the prisoner of war thing. That might help.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure we don't have another adoption of CS's fight here.
I would be happy with whatever the will of the committee is.
Okay, well,
I'll remove my objection from adopting the draft.
Okay, so is there any other, before I go to Foster and Hawker, let's leave the objection so we can talk to both bills. Representative Stoltz, I'll let you remove it here perhaps later. Representative Foster.
Yeah, just a peripheral question, not to do with this bill so much, but I was in two DMV offices in the state for lengthy reasons this last year. And I've never seen any plate displays. Do you have, in fact, plate displays that a guy can pick something out? I just don't remember seeing anything like that.
Mr. Bannock, you still with us?
I am. Okay. If that question was directed to me, thank you, Representative Foster, through the chair. I would be disappointed if not all of my offices had not only the display of all of our different types of license plates, including we have three different university license plates. We have a plate for the Children's Trust. We have Purple Heart plates. We have a myriad of different veteran plates. I would be very disappointed if you missed that. And so also we have a brochure prepared specifically to the I Support Our Veterans license plate program. So I will definitely do a little follow-up with all of my offices to make sure that we have those displays, like a point-of-sale type of display is what we're looking for there.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I might ask my wife. She's going down to the Juneau office today to get the driver's license renewed. I'll ask her if she saw any down there.
Very good. Yeah, let us know. Okay, Representative Hoffman.
My question goes to the bill. I will wait.
To the bill. Okay, any other questions for Mr. Bannock or Mr. or Representative Lynn? Representative Petula?
Well, mine's to the bill, but maybe I think Mr. Bannock's answered it, but I'd just like to clarify a point. So you're reading the language in the current law that says to a person who has been a prisoner of war to include those who may be currently, who is now a prisoner of war. Is that right? Is that how I'm understanding what you're saying?
Madam Representative, through the chair, that is a really an excellent question. I'm referring to my own standard operating procedures on that question, and it certainly does refer to past tense, former prisoners of war, and I believe that is consistent with what the actual reading of the statute would be today, or is today. If we wanted to change that phrase, who has been, or perhaps could be changed to is a prisoner of war, but clearly my reading of the statute and my reviewing our standard operating procedure, it says written verification from the United States Department of Veteran Affairs that the applicant has been held as a prisoner of war during a declared war or other conflict, implying I'm not anymore.
Okay, Representative Kutula?
Well, I think you're probably right, but then, I mean, you could also get into the question of the person has been one during a period of time and still is one. That's probably not the correct statutory construction. But so how you would currently apply that is if a spouse came into your office with the proof that his or her spouse was currently a prisoner of, currently, now, is a prisoner of war, you could give them the license tag. Is that right?
Through the chair, I would tell you that if a person came in with a document that somehow tied prisoner of war to that name, and that name was on the vehicle, there were two people that shared the name on the ownership of that vehicle, that customer would walk out of here with prisoner of war plates if that's what they wanted.
That's a good answer, even if it's maybe not statutorily correct. Thank you.
I would concur that we could be challenged on that and would lose. That's a fight that I would pick, though, and if I lost, I lost it. But we have a total of 34 vehicles today displaying prisoner of war license plates. I have zero reason to believe that anybody is taking advantage, taking wrongful advantage of that program.
Thank you. Good point.
Representative Stoltz, did you want to withdraw your
objection?
Yes,
I withdraw my objection. The objection has been removed from adopting the CS as moved by Representative Hawker. Is there any objections to that? Okay. Then we do have the CS for House Bill 245 before us at this time. The sponsor has indicated that he does support this. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Good. Is there any other questions pertaining to the CS before us and to the sponsor, the Representative Hawker?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. A query for both the sponsor and perhaps Representative Foster, who might know this. Something's been just sticking in the back of my mind that was problematic here, and it just dawned on me what it is. You know, the bill refers to the Congressional Medal of Honor. Am I not correct that the proper official term for that military decoration is not the Congressional Medal of Honor? It is, in fact, technically, correctly, simply the Medal of Honor, and the tag of Congressional is something that is oft done in colloquial speech, but it is not the correct reference to that military decoration.
I do not know.
Okay. Representative Foster?
We could research that, Mr. Chair, if you like, between now and the time it goes to the floor and make a technical amendment, I suppose, if necessary.
That would be a very minor amendment to make on the floor.
And I just might observe that I have been brought up short on that discussion previously by my friend Wayne Anthony Ross.
No comment.
You've stumped the best here, Richard Hawker. Representative Foster.
Yeah, we have an open discussion right now on the floor. I'm just wondering, I have a report in 1956. A guy in Minnesota ran for Congress on his war record. He had shot down 6 aircraft. Well, it turned out that he was with the Luftwaffe. He shot down 6 American airplanes, and he was sent to Minnesota in a prisoner of war camp. And he stayed. And when the war was over, he elected to become a U.S. citizen. Now, it doesn't say anything here on ex-prisoner of war. service or other proof they've shown above. And above, it says applicants for prisoner of war place must provide written verification that they were POWs. Well, I can say that you were POW, but it doesn't say that you were held in an American POW camp. I mean, I think a Viet Cong could probably get one of you. You know, the way this is written.
That's a legitimate concern. I don't know, Mr. Bannock, do you have any way of verifying that they are the POW on our side?
Mr. Chairman, that one, that is almost a little bit red-faced here. I don't know that the United States Department of Veteran Affairs would issue documents to a person that has been described as being the other guy, the other side.
Yeah.
I feel confident that no one has pressed that point in the Alaska Division of Motor Vehicles office.
On the same point that Representative Foster doesn't say that somebody's not going to try to do it. One of your former colleagues, Representative Willis, told me a story. They were World War II guys, and one of their colleagues was also a German, and he heard they were all getting VA benefits, and he was just mad and away. And when he went down there and applied for them and didn't get them, so there's no certainly nothing to stop people from. But it's actually a humorous point, if nothing else.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
My staff had brought some papers to me. Most of these say simply Medal of Honor. One place it says both, but I think it might be, I will check with the Department of Defense between now and the time it comes to the floor and submit a technical amendment if required.
Okay. Very good,
Representative.
Any other questions, comments concerning the bill? Yeah, not only I want to caution I have, again, I think Representative Stoltz brings up a good point. A bill like this could become a Christmas tree, so I think you want to limit the amendments you make on the floor, but certainly if you want to make a technical change.
Or perhaps, Mr. Chairman, if Mr. Representative Hawker would like to make, I let him do it and I get him the information.
Okay. All right. Okay, anything else?
Can you do that in rules?
Yeah, we could do it rules too. Yeah.
That's better.
Either way.
Representative Hopper.
Just on that point, presuming we pass this out today, just like I have on the record that I would be passing with an amend recommendation, but the amend goes to the discussion we've just had.
Okay. Fine.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chairman, accept a motion on this bill. Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move out of committee HB 245 with the attached fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objections? Okay. Seeing none?
I'd like to thank the committee very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Manning, for joining us. Okay. All right. We're still in session here. Anything else come before the committee before we discuss the rest of the week here? any birthdays? Okay, so our next meeting is tomorrow. We do have three bills, three interesting bills. Public Accountants, 274. Wonder who's the sponsor of that. House Bill 318, Eminent Domain, which I would anticipate quite a bit of discussion on that, as well as public comment. And House Bill 334, Municipal Property Tax Deferral and Exemption. That will be tomorrow. Yes, Representative
Hawkins. I just might note that the Anchorage Daily News editorial column today awarded that bill relating to public accountancy the Dulles Bill of the Year Award.
Is that congratulations or condolences?
Well, I would be happy to have it pass out of committee.
Okay, very good. So if there's nothing else come for committee, make sure you sign the yellow sheet here.
47.